pockets. May we remember who we are, unconditionally cared for by those who share our broken hearts.
Hey, it's Vocalo Radio, 91.1 FM, Chicago's only urban alternative. That song right now, Snow, from Sleeping at Last. And following their acclaimed collaboration and sold-out world premiere tour last year, Sleeping at Last and the Chicago Philharmonic reunite for a new concert experience, this time to celebrate the holiday season, especially for us here in Chicago. Home for the Holidays brings Ryan O'Neill's beloved seasonal music to life through a full orchestra arrangement performed by Chicago Philharmonic and the Chicago Chamber Choir. It's going to feature Christmas collections along with fan favorites from Sleeping at Last, who I have in studio with us.
Hello there.
Hello.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited to have you in here.
I'm happy to be here.
Just for like background info, I feel like a certain part of your catalog encapsulated my college years.
Is that right?
Yeah, I feel like I remember them so well. I mean, there was, you know, Twilight Breaking Dawn.
Yeah.
There was, I feel like you were the fourth quarter song in every episode of Grey's Anatomy for like seven seasons.
I love that fourth quarter song.
Yeah,
that's I'm going to put that in my bio.
Yeah, it was literally like when you think you're not going to cry, here comes a Sleeping at Last cover from your covers, you know?
That's right.
And then also, you know, Yearbook.
Yeah.
You know, the whole Yearbook collection. That happened just a couple years ago, so don't start doing the math at home.
Exactly.
And so I'm so excited to have you in. And I remember at that time I was a broke college student. You would do shows here and there. It was very sparse.
Yeah.
They would always be somewhere I couldn't get to because I had like $5 in my account. And then now you're going to be playing in Chicago.
That's
just
right.
Down the street from my house.
Yeah. Well, first of all, thank you for listening to my work for so long. That's so sweet. And you're right. I didn't play any shows really for the last about a decade. And so now coming back and getting to perform again over these last couple of years has been the most special experience for me, especially to get to do it with the Chicago Philharmonic, who are the most amazing musicians ever. It's a real gift.
Why do you think you didn't? Because you have always put out a lot of music. I feel like there is always so much music to tour with. Why do you think you didn't really go on the road?
It's a great question. If I'm being completely honest, the reason is I'm a perfectionist and I'm a nervous person, and so live performance is this vulnerability that felt very scary. So I toured extensively for many, many years, and then kind of got to the point where I'm like, maybe I just like recording and writing better. And just about a couple of years ago, I was starting to think through, why don't I play out live anymore? And the only reasons that I kind of found were like insecurities. What if it didn't sound right? What if I messed up? What if, you know, all the things that should not matter at all and don't have anything to do with like the kind of the magic of live music. It's like, I always think of it as sort of like an ice sculpture, you know, it's something in the room that happens and then it goes away. Only the people there got to experience it. And so over these last couple of years, I've had the huge honor of kind of re-evaluating that question and rethinking through why it is I don't play live. And when I decided that I wanted to do it again and kind of push myself, I got to do it with the Chicago Philharmonic, which is like a dream of mine to get to play with full orchestra. And so I've been very spoiled. Coming back to playing shows, I've been very, very spoiled.
I was going to say, yeah, whose idea was that? Because your voice is naturally, it already emotes a lot of emotions. You do have a very moving voice.
Thank you.
And then you're going to put a full orchestra behind you. Like that's crazy. Like how did this all come together?
It was kind of a fun story. So I went to go to a concert that the Chicago Philharmonic were playing. It was with an artist named Kishibashi. And it was in this incredible, it was just this really beautiful experience. My family was there. And there was at one point during the show that I looked around and I just saw everyone just on the edge of their seat and just fully swept up in live music. And I left that show thinking like, oh my gosh, if I ever played live again, that's how I want to do it. I want to do it with a full orchestra. And so I actually sent Terrell, the director of the Chicago Philharmonic, I sent him a DM on Instagram. And I just said, it was such a beautiful show. I just wanted to tell you how much I enjoyed it. And so he responded and said, hey, I would love to meet up. And so we had lunch, and I think halfway through the lunch, he was like, so have you thought about how many, like, what songs you want to play? And I was like, wait, what? And because I totally thought it was just like, I mean, obviously I would have loved, I was hoping that I could eventually play with the Chicago Philharmonic, but he was just so warm and has been such an incredible support. And so, yeah, that led to kind of thinking through what was that going to look like. And then we played a handful of sold out shows last fall. So it was a really special thing to get to return to live performance in this way.
I was going to say, was it a process you had to get used to? Because I know you, when you have played shows or, you know, things that I've seen, I would watch, you know, you playing Turning Page at like Sundance when you're just to cry, just when I felt like I needed it. You know what I'm saying? And most of the time, like a lot of the performances you could find of you online before it was with the Philharmonic, it was just you and your piano.
Yeah.
You know, and then now you have like a full orchestra behind you. Was that surreal?
Pretty incredible band. it is surreal. I've actually, so in these last couple of years, I've done kind of three different versions of shows. The most vulnerable is just me and a guitar and a piano. It's just me playing. And then there's a middle of me and a quartet or a quintet. And then the full orchestral shows is just like, the only thing I will say that is hard to play with orchestra is that it sounds so beautiful that I forget what I'm supposed to do because I'm so like swept up in what they're doing. I'm like, oh, look at everyone. They're doing so great. And but other than that, it really is like absolute musician dream come true situation.
Because, you know, Sleeping at Last, I always wondered why you kept Sleeping at Last because it originally started off as a band.
That's right.
There's three of you. And then, you know, now it's just, and then, you know, when everyone moved on, you decide to keep the name. Why?
Yeah.
Why did you?
I think around that time, which was about over a decade ago now, when each of the band members decided to pursue other things, I was thinking about it, and the songs have always been like my audio journal. I've kind of poured all of my thoughts and my feelings and my heart into this thing called Sleeping at Last. And so it felt very natural to just keep going with it rather than to start a new identity around it. It just felt like that's my journal. I can't say goodbye to that.
Do you feel like it also has allowed you to keep some anonymity? Because I know, you know, when I was following you, again, just a couple years ago in college.
Just a couple years ago.
That was when Instagram was happening, and that's when no one took Instagram seriously. Like,
it was
just a picture of your foot, and so, like, no one took it, like, serious. And so, you know, you had one, and I think it was just, like, your family and, like, you know, trees and flowers.
I took lots of, like, very pretty pictures of skies and clouds. Yeah.
Yeah, and I remember thinking, if you didn't know who this was, you just think he's, you know, just a guy living his life. Do you think it's a kind of allowed some separation between professional and personal?
I probably need more separation. I have this conversation with my manager sometimes, and I'm so deeply in, like, Sleeping at Last is so personal to me that it feels like it is me, but then at the same time, I am also a person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
that you know, if anything were to ever happen with Sleeping at Last, the name or whatever, I still have to exist. You know, so I'm trying to keep that separation. But yeah, having a moniker instead of just it being named under my name, I think it does. It kind of keeps it a little bit more about the music, I think, and that's something I've enjoyed. And I would say over the last couple years, I've sort of come out of my shell a little bit in terms of it's not just photos of clouds and trees.
No, your Instagram is completely different. Now it's
a lot of me talking to the camera, which is unthinkable. Like, even as I'm saying it, I'm embarrassed. That's just not my style. But I've been pushing myself not to go really sad really soon. But my mom passed away a few years ago, and I think that unexpected gravity shift in my life kind of made me rethink a lot of my ideas. And part of returning to live performance was very much a response to that. And then even how I'm trying to overcome just insecurities in general and make sure that I'm not just a hiding behind the camera.
I was wondering, one of the original members of Sleeping at Last, it related to you, right?
Yeah, so Chad's my brother. Chad. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
I thought
so
it
Chad
was your brother.
Played drums, and then my best friend Dan was bass and keyboards.
So, like, because I was going to say, they're still around, right? Like, what do they think now?
Absolutely. You know? Yeah, no, we are all still very, very close. And, I think that they've built really beautiful lives. And I'm grateful that I got to start alongside them because having, you know, not only family, but, I mean, Dan also feels like family to me, too. So it felt like getting to do all this with my brothers was really special. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then now, you know, billions of streams later and so many projects, you know, I feel like you're definitely someone who stays working. You know, you've always had like a project or like picked up projects, and it feels like your projects have never cut off. I mean, you've had these, they're like long stories.
They are. Yeah. I never do. It's been many, many years since I've done like a traditional album. I do these series or collections of songs, and I have three primary projects that I like to make music in, and this is kind of my little like my elevator pitch of them. So one of them is called astronomy, and so anytime something interesting happens in the observable space above us, if it's an astronomical discovery or event, I will try to write a little musical score for that moment, and so that's sort of, I think of that as my telescope. And then I also do this project called Atoms, which are these little tiny pieces of music that are inspired by just something beautiful that I see, whether it's, you know, the way light is hitting the wall in a certain way or how water's moving. I will take these little tiny videos and then I will write a little score for that moment. And so that's my microscope. And then Atlas is where all my lyrical writing, and that's the human experience between my telescope and my microscope. And so it's the human experience of both of those micro and macro ideas.
And I was going to say, this was a question I was going to ask as well. It seems like visually, a lot of your work is like kind of accompanied visually.
Yeah.
It seems like its visuals are also a huge part of your music.
Yeah, it's a big deal. I there's a painter that I get the absolute privilege of working with. Her name is Alicia Adejanto, and she is in Indonesia, and she is this incredible painter that paints all of the watercolor paintings for each individual song that I come out with in my Atlas project. So all the main songs that have been on Grey's Anatomy and things like that are mostly from that Atlas project, that middle human experience. Visuals. I think I'm a visual writer as well. Like, lyrics only kind of make sense when I can picture them. And so I write that way. So I think that is why visuals always have a huge pull for me, or something I get excited about with music.
And then other than these projects, like, you know, Yearbook and Atlas and things like that, you also had, you know, these other projects that you put together, like the Christmas
collection. Yeah.
And then you also had like the covers collection, which I loved. And then that's when, like, I feel like when you started releasing those, like, vinyl was like becoming cool again.
Yes, absolutely.
So you released the vinyl that I was like, oh my gosh, I have to be cool. And like,
I like pressing vinyl as a musician is my favorite thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't personally do it, but having my music on vinyl, I love it. I'm half like leaning my career into just becoming a vinyl manufacturer, a record store. But it's been fun, especially, yeah, the covers started with Grey's Anatomy, actually. So the first cover that I had ever done, the lovely folks over there that are in charge of music, they asked if I would cover the song I'm Gonna Be 500 Miles, the Proclaimer song.
Oh my gosh.
And so that was the first one, and it had like a really tight deadline. And so they're like, hey, would you be interested in potentially trying to cover this song in your style for the show? And I had a cold, and it was like, I had two days to try to do it. And so that was kind of the beginning of it. And then I have since kind of released these volumes of covers. And then for the Christmas songs, that's been a tradition that stretches all the way back. I am going to date myself again.
I know people are going to do math on this interview.
I'm giving way too many dates. That goes back to, I think, 25 years. I have had the tradition of recording one Christmas song every year is sort of my like version of a Christmas card. So I choose a Christmas song and then I cover it. And that has accumulated into these Christmas collections.
Oh my gosh, I love that. It was like a Christmas, and it would just be for the fans and then your friends and family.
Yeah, exactly.
You
anybody
know?
That wanted to hear it. And it was just sort of like, I love the idea of that. I love Christmas music too. So mm-hmm. it's a fun way to kind of keep me, even if I don't feel like it in October when I'm supposed to record it.
<I'm> like, in your costume.
Okay, it's tradition. Yeah, exactly. gotta serve the tradition.
Could you give me like your top three Christmas songs you enjoy performing? Like what's the top three
and
you can warm
well
up for the
with
show?
This show coming up because I'm hearing so I would record them and they would have strings but they were not orchestral versions when I was recording them. So now getting to rehearse and hearing them with the full orchestra is really special. But I would say my favorite Christmas song probably ever is "O Holy Night," and I would say a couple songs that I'm really excited to perform at the show, O Come, Emmanuel, and then I wrote an original Christmas song, so I'm not going to include it as one of my favorite songs, but I am going to include it as a song that I'm really looking forward to playing. It's an original Christmas song called Snow, as we heard, and so that will be the first time I get to hear that with full orchestra, which I'm very much looking forward to.
Wow, that's so exciting.
How about you? Do you have favorite Christmas music?
You know what? For me, I feel like one that kind of gets me is the George Michael.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the Wham. Or is it?
Yeah,
it's Wham,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
Last Christmas. Last Christmas always gets me,
in the
holiday mood.
Oh, that's cool.
And then it's also that, like, dichotomy of you say you're moving on, but then you're thinking about thinking about it, you know. So it's like, have we really, you know? It's
That's
like
great.
Heartbreaking, but you also like feel like you could walk through like a Christmas tree farm with it playing
for sure.
Yeah, no, that's definitely like one of my favorite songs.
I haven't covered that one yet. I need to add that to the list.
That's why I brought it up. I'm trying to hear my Sleeping at Last cover of that. Next Christmas,
it will be very sad.
I haven't gotten a Christmas card, so maybe next Christmas
next
card.
Christmas. I love that.
And you know, I feel like I have to talk about the song that like shaped my I think millions of people feel this way, like the song that shaped me, like my romantic views in college, and like again, billions of streams on this song, Turning Page. Yeah. I mean, that song it's so special to so many people. Uh-huh. You know, I want to know everything about, you know, I want to know everything about how it came together. But it's funny because when you know, my mom and I, we're huge Twilight fans, but when we would just have these conversations about Turning Page where she's like,
you know what?
Like if you know, you listen to these words and you're like, this is really someone in love. Like this is really love.
So cool.
And it's so funny because I know you said when you were writing Turning Page, you felt like it shouldn't be just a collection of pretty words. But it is the most collection of prettiest words ever. You know, I feel like this is one of the most beautifully written, composed, and performed songs my time.
That's
like,
sweet. Thank you.
How did it all happen?
Yeah, a friend of mine suggested that he's like, have you ever thought about trying to write a song for the Twilight series? And I was like, yeah, hasn't everyone? Because those soundtracks were so cool.
Oh my gosh!
And it felt like a very, very big swing to even try to write a submission for it. And so I went home and I watched all the movies leading up to Breaking Dawn Part 1, and so I could kind of tell. I'm like, all right, there's this love story is starting to it's definitely heading towards a wedding, and so I watched them. I sat down at the piano for a few days and was very superstitious that I was like, it won't get into the movie. So if it doesn't get into the movie, I need to make sure that I believe it and I own it. And it's a personal song, not just a song about vampires. Because if it doesn't, I'm going to have this song about Twilight.
Which is crazy. You didn't think it was going to get in.
Oh my gosh. I was certain it was not going to get in. I wrote it for my wife. She will argue that significantly. She does not. She's like, that is for Bella. I'm like, no, I swear it's a love story. I know that kind of love because of her. And so that's, I wanted to bend that towards the story of Edward and Bella. And so I did. And when I found out that the song was going to be in the film and in the film twice, it was, yeah, it was a really huge moment in my musical life. It was, yeah, it's really, really special. I got to go to the premiere and I got to, you know, see it with the cast and crew and all that stuff. And yeah, it was really special. It was, and it means a lot to hear that that song continues to be a part of people's weddings. And over the last few years, I've noticed that people are using it a lot towards like welcoming their newborns into the world too. And that's such a, yeah, it's a such a compliment and such a gift to have something sit alongside people in that way.
I was going to say, because you had gotten married the year prior.
Yes.
And so you kind of had those fresh feelings.
Exactly.
So I was wondering, when you wrote it, like, did you ever for a minute, like, think it would be this, like, again, people use as their wedding songs, people, oh, you know, like, yeah, their first dance songs. And then now the audience has grown, so now they're having babies. And
yeah,
so it's
yeah,
for the kids too. Like, did you ever think it would be the song?
I didn't actually think it would ever get into the film or become that become what it is. But I will say that as a creative, it's kind of a funny contradiction, because you write something and you do kind of have a little internal dream of how something's going to be received. Or, you know, like I could sit there and in one moment be like, this is the worst thing I've ever produced and nobody should ever hear this, to being like, I wonder if it could be considered for an Oscar.
Yeah.
So I think those two ridiculous perspectives need to exist. And so I'm sure at some point I imagine what it would feel like to have the song in the film, which is what I was aiming for. And but no, I didn't actually believe that it was going to make it. And yeah, I'm really grateful.
You said that you, when you were writing the song, you had videos of, you know, Bella and Edward in Eclipse.
Yeah.
And you were,
yeah,
like, you know, like when you were putting it all together, you were, had videos of them in the background. So I always wondered, because I know as an audience member, that was like the moment when we're getting the wedding reveal and the dress reveal. That,
yeah,
was like hype. If you guys were not around during that time, people were trying to sneak onto set. Like, we wanted to know what the dress was going to look like. And so I heard that all the artists, they wanted the wedding moment. They wanted the aisle song. They wanted the wedding song.
Sure.
And so, you know, as she's coming in, we don't have the reveal yet. It's just the intro, your piano intro, the piano keys. And then when that bar ends, we think we're going to get your first verse. But instead, you do something criminal to us. We get violins to the back of the dress reveal. And you're like, what? And then you're, you know, of course, you're like, start after that. But I know when you submit, I think you said you submitted instrumentals and then,
yeah,
the live versions. You have to submit like four different versions.
Yeah, anytime,
right?
You send anything for film and TV, they usually will prefer to have an instrumental and a regular vocal version, just so that they can kind of trim along dialogue and things like that. They can, you know, mute your lyrics while somebody, you know, pronounces someone dead or whatever.
Or kiss
that's
the little, bride.
That's more Grey's. Yeah,
yeah,
that's Grey's Anatomy. Sorry.
That was the seven seasons of Grey's Anatomy.
Yeah,
talking there.
Exactly. But so I sent both, and yeah, and it was special because they used the instrumental, as you said, in the walking down the aisle moment, and then they used the full lyric version again in the honeymoon sequence as well, which is funny.
Yeah, no, it was. It was
also an exciting moment.
Yeah, the two most anticipated movies.
That's right.
Like scenes of the movie.
Yeah.
So, how did you feel when you first saw it?
You never know how it's going to get used with any sort of film and TV, and so you'll get like one little paragraph because they also don't want anybody to you know, spill the beans on on what's happening in the story. So I think it was something like Bella wears her dress, and then I didn't know if it was going to be a 10-second background moment or if it was going to be the full song. And so once the wedding scene happened, I was like, well, that was incredible. And this was during the premiere. And then I had no idea it was going to be in the honeymoon scene as well. And so, yeah, so I was blown away. I was very, very honored. And sometimes it can go the opposite way where you're like so excited about something and then you hear it in the radio on the background of a character. You know, you're like, I think that's my song. Nope, that's not my song.
It's on the TV.
Yeah, it's on the TV in another room. So I was, I was very excited. It's a very cool experience.
And then I also, it's kind of funny because I heard a Christina Perry interview, last year where she was talking about her song Thousand Years, which is another epic song.
It's the soundtrack.
I feel like that song and your song were like, those are kind of like the two.
I'm honored to be in the same conversation, but that song is so good. That's so good.
But I know she told a story that, you know, because her song is Thousand Years, mm-hmm. and that originally your song was, you know, Turning Page was 100 Years.
Yes, it was called 100 Years because of the opening line. And that was one of the kind of cryptic calls that I got before everything was confirmed. It was like, hey, one little caveat, would you be willing to retitle your song? And I was like, absolutely. And they're like, because there's another song that's also going to be in the film called 1,000 Years, and yours is currently called 100 Years. I'm like, well, 1,000 wins. So
I felt like that was very nice of you. I was I feel like that shows that you're like, okay, I'll change my song.
I was happy to do it. I was happy to do it. And it was a really, I've gotten to know Christina over the years, and she's just the loveliest. We toured together a little bit after the film. And the co-writer of 1,000 Years, his name's David Hodges, and he actually was the friend that gave me the little nudge and said, have you ever thought about writing for Twilight? And he didn't know I went away and wrote a song, and I didn't know he was also writing with Christina, and we were both writing for the same movie, and I think we both individually got confirmation that our song was in, and I think we both felt a little like, I don't want to tell my friend Ryan, or I don't want to tell David, you know, like we were like trying to be thoughtful, like what if their song isn't in and mine is, you know, and then to find out that we both not only got into the film, but we also both had almost the same title.
I was going to say, did you guys just see each other at the premiere and you're like, exactly. Glad you're here too.
Like, wow. Okay. Yeah. It was a really fun coincidence.
If you're just tuning in, we have Sleeping at Last, also known as Ryan O'Neill, here with us. You know, you grew up in Wheaton.
I did.
What was that like?
It was quiet. It's a nice suburb. I enjoyed it. Yeah. I was homeschooled, so I had a very different experience than probably a lot of people did. And my mom she kept our world very big, and so we traveled a lot, and we Wheaton is kind of where I fell in love with music. So I'm grateful for the thousands of hours of sitting in my room playing guitar.
And now you still live in the Chicago suburbs.
Yeah, right near next door in Glen Ellen. So.
And you are you're throwing this amazing holiday concert for us. I'm so excited.
Oh, thank you.
You know, the Sleeping at Last and the Chicago Philharmonic. This is going to be happening next Saturday, right? Is it next Saturday?
The 29th. Yeah, so, a week and a half. Oh, my goodness, that is so soon.
Yeah, this is happening the 29th of November, home for the holidays. And it's going to bring all of your favorite seasonal music. I mean, this is 'tis the season. There's no better way. You're going to be singing some of your Christmas songs and original Christmas music.
It'll be kind
music.
Of a 50-50 split, exactly.
And then also some of your catalog is going to be in there as well?
Yeah, so Turning Page will be played. I'll play my song Saturn. So it'll be the set list was thoughtfully arranged where it's not just like random songs that and then Christmas songs. It was like, oh, wait, this theme of light really goes well with this, you know, this Christmas song. So it's a lot of fun. We're elated to get to do it.
So again, that is going to be November 29th. And also, are you planning on doing more shows?
Yes, absolutely. I will have some shows in 2026. And mm-hmm. I think the only one confirmed right now, announced is February. Also with the Chicago Philharmonic in Orlando. Yeah. So I'm really looking forward to that. But I will be playing some shows next year.
No, that's so awesome. And again, this is like surreal for me because I was trying to hunt you down for a show for years growing up.
Oh, that's so nice.
And now you're going to be, it just all happens. You know,
that's
life
so
happens
cool.
The way it's supposed to. So we're going to go ahead. We're going to end with, I mean, the song that shaped so many young women and young men and people growing up. And this, I also really Love this music video, by the way.
Thank you.
The one, I mean, I feel like you have kind of a couple. Yeah. But the one with Derek.
Yeah, this one, we did it quite a while after the song came out. And I was like, it never got an official music video. And Derek Huff was kind enough to direct it and star in it. And he's an incredible human. And so he and Philip Chabib directed it and came up with the beautiful dance for the whole thing.
So. The choreography is really amazing. And it is funny that you say that, because I don't think someone has released a music video like years later. And then it's still got like 13, it has like 13 million views. Like people are like, we don't care when you release a music, we're still going to watch it. So thank you again so much, Sleeping at Last, Ryan O'Neill here with us. And we'll leave you with Turning Page.
Your love is my turning page. Only the sweetest words remain. Every kiss is a cursive line. Every touch is a reason.